This is a classic application of biological thinking to social thinking. At the time, such views seemed to justify the European colonization of Asia and Africa for the good of those people living there. And it also, amazingly, led many European Americans at that time, the turn of the century, to literally believe that Native Americans and African Americans would simply die out in the United States. And the European races, European American races, would just naturally survive and dominate. Now, those are some racist applications of Darwinism that were very prominent around the turn of the last century, around 1900. For some, social Darwinism meant military competition among nations, and this was also visible at the time. Beginning in the late 1800s, Germany's leading Darwinist biologist, Ernst Haeckel, argued that nations and races advance through competition. An ardent nationalist, he advocated a strong, united Germany. Germany at that time was still broken into a lot of different kingdoms and principalities. He said Germany should all unite together to dominate the world. Haeckel's social Darwinism contributed to German militarism that led directly up to the First World War. And studies and interviews conducted of military leaders in Germany during the First World War inevitably justified what they were doing in the First World War on Darwinian terms borrowed directly from the writings of people like Ernst Haeckel. Germany's defeat in that war deeply embittered Haeckel and his followers. Convinced of the biological superiority of the German people, some of Haeckel's followers contributed to the rise of Nazism, and his monist philosophy fit right in to Hitler's arguments and teachings and his policies of racial purity. Well, let me give another example of the implications and the impact that this Darwinian thinking actually had on social policies. And probably none is more stark than the world of eugenics. Combining Mendelian theories of genetics with social Darwinism led to the worldwide eugenics movement. Shortly after Darwin published his great book, Origin of Species, his cousin, Francis Galton, conceived of the idea of applying its teachings to human development. And let me just read a little passage from Galton. Sort of gives the flavor of what he was doing. Galton's own description of this, and then I'll sort of analyze it because it had such an impact on social policies at the time. He wrote, "It is a first step with farmers and gardeners to endeavor to obtain good breeds of domestic animals and sedulously to cultivate plants. For it pays them well to do so. If serious inquiries into heredity now know that qualities gained by good nourishment and good education never descend by inheritance, but perish with the individual, whilst inborn qualities are transmitted." Note, social benefits don't make any difference in plants and animals. Environmental improvements live just with that individual. No, it's only the inborn qualities that are transmitted. So he goes on to write, "It is therefore a waste of labor to try to improve a poor stock by careful feeding or careful gardening." Think of the application to taking care of inferior people. Goes on to write, "The question was then forced upon me, could not the race of man be similarly improved? Could not the undesirables be gotten rid of and the desirables multiplied? The answer to these questions was a decided yes. And in this way, I lighted on what is now known as eugenics. As in other species," Galton argued, "fit humans produce fit offsprings, and unfit humans produce unfit offsprings. As a thinking species, humans can use this to accelerate the evolutionary process through the selective breeding of humans, just as they do the selective breeding of cows or plants." Galton defended his theory with social surveys and polls that purportedly showed that ability and success ran in families, while inability and failure ran in other families.